You're listening to CJMQ 88.9 FM, and this is the Pulse of the Eastern Townships. I'm William Crooks. We've got three solid segments lined up for you today. We'll begin with a visit to Downey Nursery and Tree Farm, where owner Jimmy Downey talks about this year's Christmas tree season and what he's seeing as demand rises heading into December. After that, we'll head to Sherbrooke for the recent powerlifting meet, with a look at how local competitors performed and the growing interest the sport continues to generate in the region. And we'll finish off with music from this past Saturday's Townships Book Fest, where live performances help set the tone for the day's events. Let's get started. You're listening to CJMQ 88.9 FM. I'm William Crooks with the Pulse of the Eastern Townships. Today, we're taking you to Downey Nursery and Tree Farm, where owner Jimmy Downey gives us an inside look at this year's Christmas tree season. From stable prices and strong Canadian demand, to labor shifts and climate-related pest pressures, Downey breaks down what's shaping the 2025 harvest. He also talks about why this year's trees are among the freshest he's seen in years, thanks to ideal fall conditions, and why more Canadians are choosing locally grown evergreens. This report is produced with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative. The last time we talked, you were worried about Trump's tariffs in the spring. What's happened since then, Jimmy?
We still are not tariffed. We are still on the good side of the fence for today. We don't know tomorrow. Things change very quick in the politics today. But we are still in good relationship with the United States. We do have a tariff that's been implemented for, not a tariff, it's a duty. So every tree that crosses 50 cents goes to the American Christmas Tree Promotion Board. So we have been, a good relationship with the state for many years there. And the name is Boston Tree, where... Nova Scotia there, I think right after World War II, some ships flew up, and Boston was the first responders in Nova Scotia, and since then there's a Christmas tree from Nova Scotia every year that goes to Boston.
And your main customers are New York and Boston, right?
A bit of Massachusetts, New York, Hampshire, most of the New England states, everything that is... 6 to 7 hours driving away from here.
How did the drought at the end of the fall affect the Christmas trees?
Not too bad. What's really important for Christmas trees is spring and fall. Spring for the transplants. Once they're freshly transplanted in the field, we got lots of rain, so the survival rate was good. And in fall, before we cut the tree has to have water in it to stay fresh. So we did get the fall rain and the spring rain. We did get a few losses in the field during the summer, but nothing exceptional there. But irrigation was used more in the nursery. The tree this year, since we did get a lot of rain in the past few weeks, regained their weight in terms of water. And the temperatures were phenomenal. We didn't have to stop the harvest. Sometimes it gets too hot, we have to stop. We just went right through. There was barely any sun. So the trees are exceptionally fresh this year.
Tell me more about this American duty.
Yeah. So that's been there for quite a while. I think it's been, nothing really changed. It went really well, actually. For Canadians, so the exportation of the exports of trees, the numbers are stagnant now. So for the past 15 years, we would export more and more trees to the U.S., but now even a bit less. So the market for exporting trees sort of hits the maximum there. But it's different for Canadians. Canadians are wanting more trees. Younger families are more traditional, and they like to make an environmental choice, and that tree falls in the food category. Yeah. The price for Canadians should be the same as last year because of not more trees going to the U.S., more trees stay on the inside of Canada. Yeah. So there's not going to be an increase of price, nor will there be a shortage. So Canadians will have a very fresh tree, same price as last year.
A hot recent topic has been temporary foreign workers. Did anything change for you on that front this year?
No, it was more hotels and restaurants. Agriculture still has capacity to most of all farms, not the three, all farms have more than 70% of them. 70% of the employees as external. TET, we call them. Travailleurs étrangers. It's almost closing the external works from Mexico, Guatemala, all that would be very detrimental to the entire industry of agriculture, which is already is very detrimental for hotels and restaurants, but for agriculture, it would be horrible.
How are things going with finding workers?
There is more Canadians that are willing to work on my farm, people. Yeah. The past 2 years there have been an increase in young kids and coming out of school or older kids that are willing to work on the farm, which hasn't been seen in the past 10 years. You know. Last year, I had to lay off a few employees because I had too many. So it's the first time where I get to pick and choose who works.
Not everyone trims a tree at the same speed or the same way, eh, Jimmy?
Exactly. So before it would be like, you know, if you show up with boots and everything, you're ready to go and make sure you show up every day. Now I get to pick and choose the ones that work a bit better or seem to be more adequate for the job there.
What's going on with the witch's broom fungus these days?
The witch's broom? Well, that will always be present. The witch's broom is the fungus that goes from blueberries to fern to Christmas tree. So it has three hosts. As long as there's ferns and blueberries, natural blueberry in the woods, then there will always be witch's broom in the tree. Yeah, we removed them. There is more pests coming in from, you know, climate change. So we do adapt our culture to that. We're working closely with the Minister of Agriculture and the Club Agro d'Environnement de l'Estrie. They're like the scouting group. We are monitoring and scouting any potential new pests that could affect the industry.
What about ticks? Is that an issue?
Yep. We not here on my farm, but at the association there, many people have seen ticks on them during July and August working in the field. The employees are more susceptible to that. The ticks are not in the trees at the moment. When they're sold to Christmas trees, they're dead. Walking in the field, their ticks are on the rise. There's some farms there that told me that they have one tick per week on every employee per employee. Yeah. So anybody who's out there in the field has to monitor. The association did give information and courses on how to remove ticks, what to do when you find a tick, et cetera, et cetera. And that has been also translated into Spanish.
What's on the agenda for your farm for Christmas?
So because of the early snowfall, we are expecting a lot of people at our first opening weekend, which is the 29th, 30th. We are finishing up our wholesales, and we're going preparing for the tooth and cut. And we expect a big weekend, opening weekend. People are very excited this year to get a treat. And it seems like a Canadian tree that has been grown and trimmed in Canada by Canadians is more of a choice than a plastic tree because of the fighting going on in the politics. People want a Canadian product. So the Christmas tree response in that order, guys, it is a Canadian product, and it's an environmental choice, and it's a tradition. So it's a plus value for us as Christmas tree growers to provide quality trees to be cleaned this year.
You've been listening to CJMQ 88.9 FM. That was my conversation with Jimmy Downey of Downey Nursery and Tree Farm about this year's Christmas tree outlook. For more local reporting from around the eastern townships, visit cjmqnews.com. This segment was produced with support of the Local Journalism Initiative. You're listening to the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative. Today we head to Sherbrooke, where local coach and gym owner Jeremy Dion Shields is helping to lift the city's powerlifting scene to new heights. Dion Shields, who recently organized the provincial championships, tells us how the sport is growing fast among young athletes and why dedication and community spirit keep driving it forward. First, tell me about yourself, Jeremy.
Yeah, perfect. So basically, I've been powerlifting for about maybe 5 or 6 years now. I've been coaching powerlifting for about 3. So my background, I did a back kinesiology at UCTI. And then after that, 2 years ago, let's say, I started the gym also with my girlfriend. So it was like a powerlifting-specific gym. And so I've been in the Federation since, I think it's 2020, actually, so 5 years. What got me into it, actually, is because I was training. I started training more for firefighter because I did my stage up to be a firefighter. So to get into that, you needed to have, like, a certain, you had to have, like, I think it was 150 pounds. You had to bench press 12 times, something like that. So back then, I was doing body weight training, so I wanted to start, that's what got me more into like weight training in itself. So that's why I got into training. And then while I was bench pressing and everything, I kind of found the federation. I saw that that's what the main federation was, the FTD. So I kind of got informed into that. And then throughout the years, I started also pushing my squat, my deadlift, and that's really what got me into the sport. The first actually competition I ever did was bench only. So it was right before the pandemic, so it was like 2019. So that's when I did my first competition, was bench only, and back then I didn't know if I wanted to do all three lifts, and then eventually I just kind of started doing all three.
Tell me about the origins of your powerlifting gym in Sherbrooke. It's the only one, correct?
Yeah, it's the only powerlifting gym. So basically the origin of the gym itself is that when I started coaching for powerlifting, I was with the company. Then when I stopped being with that company, I kind of launched my own it was Shields Performance back then, so it was my own coaching company. And when I did that, I decided to buy a combo rack because I already had a bit of equipment at home because I used to have a home gym. So I bought a bit of equipment for the event, Snap Sunran, so that everyone could train, basically. So I bought a combo rack. It was the cheapest one you could find, but still, I bought a combo rack. I bought some calibrated plates. And that's when it kind of came into my mind, so like, why couldn't I start a gym? You know, a powerlifting gym, because there was one like maybe 3 years prior to start it, but it really never lifted off because they were like, it was a person that was interested in powerlifting, had bought a little bit of powerlifting equipment, but the owner of the gym didn't care about powerlifting at all. So he was really like all kind of sports and et cetera. So when they started, I was like, okay, well, my dream of having maybe a gym one day had gone away. But right when I started, like I told you, my coaching company, it had been 3 years that there was no powerlifting gym, so at that point I was like, okay, well, maybe it's maybe it's time to step into that space. So that was like at the beginning of the summer, I think, we put like a full year of preparation into like starting the gym, seeing what we wanted to buy, purchasing, etc., having a plan, financing. So it really all started when I actually launched my coaching business, which kind of led to the gym business also.
When did you start helping out with the provincial championships?
So this is the first year I organized provincials, because this was the first time I organized it. But previously I was a bénévole. I volunteered. I think the first time I volunteered was like in. I've been volunteering for like 4 years, something like that. So it wasn't always provincial. Sometimes it was provincial. Sometimes it was just local meets. But really, provincials, the first time I actually organized them.
How did things go at the provincials this year, earlier in November?
So honestly, it went super well. We're getting a lot of people like the competition. A lot of positive feedback. A lot of people saying, because this year we organized the junior and sub-juniors. So up to 24 years old, but the older, so 24 and above, they had another competition. So it went really well, and then people were saying, the older people were like, oh, we want you to organize our competition. So overall, it went really well. We had around 300 spectators. If we count the athletes, probably had around like 400 spectators over the weekend. But like spectators that weren't athletes competing, we had about 250 folks. So overall, pretty much what we expected. It was great with that. Other than that, it was pretty much the first year that provincials had also as much the light. In the past year, they had a little bit of that, but not much. So it's like the biggest visual effect provincials for sure, probably ever.
Where was it held in Sherbrooke?
It was Osandi Falls. Oh, so overall, I had, like, of my athletes that I coach, I only had two. They did super, super well. One of them had a provincial record, a podium finish. It was a big provincial record, too. It was a 7-kilo record on bench press, which is kind of rare, because usually you'll get more like 0.5 or 1-kilo records. So a 7-kilo record is, like, pushing it quite a lot. And like I said, he finished with a 600-kilo total for a 74-kilo sub-junior. I think that's probably the fifth time it's done in Quebec, the province, so like really rarely done. My other athlete did well for his objective, but he wasn't competing for a podium or anything, but he still had a deadlift PR, really easy total PR also. And then other Sherbrooke athletes, it really depends, but overall I think a lot of them did quite well. There were quite a few podium finishes. There was Simon Thibodeau, 93-kilo junior, which I think finished third overall. Was pretty much aiming for that, so he was happy with that. There was Benjamin Levesque, which also finished third at 105 kilos.
How much training goes into performing well on these lifts?
Let's say like Loic Blau, which was my sub-junior. It really depends, honestly, because like he's like the optimum of, like, if everything goes well, that's how it goes. He's been probably training for like a year and a half to get provincial records, but most people, and juniors, sub-juniors, they've probably got like at least 1 or 2 years of competition in them before going to provincials, because you have to qualify. So I'd say like 2 to 3 years is probably the average, and the people that perform the most are probably like 4 or 5 years in that age class. So 4 or 5 years of training age, let's say. But if you go to the more open and masters, those that perform the best usually have 10 to 15 years of experience of lifting experience or training.
What's the difference between powerlifting training and bodybuilding training?
Yeah, so I'd say both of them have a great carryover. So usually, like, people who have a bodybuilding past training and go into powerlifting, they'll do quite well, because it's similar. You know, in powerlifting, you also your goal is also to take to gain muscle mass, because more muscle mass equals more potential strength. So usually there's a great carryover. But what's more specific, I'd say, is, like, for example, have mostly a split made around the main lift. So like you'll have a squat bench day, you'll have a bench day, you'll have a deadlift squat day, so it's more centered around the main lift. And then afterwards, you'll have the accessories that are really accessories that you're trying to push the muscles that are lacking mass and strength. So you'll push more specifically towards the muscles, towards powerlifting muscles. You won't have as much like, let's say curls, say calf raises. You know, those exercises are more aesthetic. You'll push a little bit less. And also you'll have a little bit less, rep ranges will be lower generally in the main lift, but in the accessories, it will kind of be similar to bodybuilding in the sense that we'll still try to push a little volume in our accessories and intensity. And also, I say one last thing is intensity is gauged differently. Also, bodybuilding intensity is quite always very high, whereas powerlifting you'll cycle the intensity. So you'll usually start it quite low, bring it up like the RB 6, 7, 8, and then end with an high of RB 9, say, and then move on to the next block. So you'll really cycle intensity to not induce too much fatigue of the nervous system. So that's why you're cycling it that way.
What does RPE mean?
Yeah, exactly. Well, RPE is rate of perceived exertion. So it's like 0 to 10, but it's basically the same principle as reps in reserve, but upside down. So let's say you'd have one rep in reserve, well, RPE equivalent would be something like RP9.
What else is on your horizon?
Well, we will organize another competition in March, a local competition. We did two last year. We have about 40 to 50 probably participants, something like that. Maybe 40 to 60, I'm not sure, but in that range, that will allow us to come and compete at our gym. And afterwards, we'd like to organize both provincials. We'd like to organize both provincials ideally if we can. Usually they don't let club organize both. So we'd really have to prove that we're worth considering. But we'd like to organize most likely both, or at least redo the juniors and sub-juniors and just go even to something even bigger and more impressive.
That was Sherbrooke powerlifting coach and organizer Jeremy Dion Shields speaking about the recent Championnat Provinciaux and the growing passion for strength sports in the townships. For more local stories like this one, visit cjmqnews.com and keep your finger on the pulse of the Eastern Townships. You're listening to the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative. On Saturday, the Townships Book Fest drew its largest crowd yet at Hope Community Church in Lenoxville. More than 200 people came through the doors over the course of the day, double last year's turnout, to meet local authors, browse new books, and enjoy live performances. Alongside the readings and workshops, one highlight was a special appearance by the local a cappella octet, Eight Misbehavin', who filled the hall with rich harmonies and a warm sense of community. Recorded live at this year's Townships Book Fest, this is Eight Misbehavin' performing two pieces, the Serene La Nuit and their rendition of the traditional folk song Wayfarin' Stranger.
Thank you. Therefore, a foreign stranger traveling through this world below, by bitter sickness, toil, or danger, in the fair land to which I go, I'm going there to see my Savior. I'm going there no more to roam. I am just going over Jordan. I am just going over home. And I know dark clouds will hover on me, and I know my path is rough and steep, but golden fields lie out before me, where weary eyes no more will weep. I'm going there to see my Savior. I'm going.
Misbehaving with La Nuit and Wayfaring Stranger, captured during Saturday's Townships Book Fest in Lenoxville. This year's edition featured more than 35 authors, children's programming, live music, and a packed crowd gathering to celebrate English language writing in the region. Organizers say the strong turnout shows just how vibrant the literary community has become in the Eastern Townships, and plans are already underway for next year. You're listening to The Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM. I'm William Crooks. That wraps up today's show on CJMQ 88.9 FM. From Christmas trees in the fields at Downey Nursery, to big lifts at the Sherbrooke Powerlifting Meet, to the music that carried Bookfest this past weekend, it's been great bringing you these local stories. You can find more coverage anytime at cjmqnews.com. Thanks for listening to The Pulse of the Eastern Townships, and thanks to the Local Journalism Initiative for its support. And as always, keep your finger on the pulse.